Welcome to Come Read With Me. I'm Jeff, and this is my world. This podcast is about getting to know my friends better by reading a book with them and discussing it. Some of these friends read a lot, some read a little, and some, honestly, I'm not sure can read, but we'll find out, that's for sure. Today's guest reader is Katrin. We met through Caroline from episode 1, and have known each other for about a year, and together make up two-fifths of our awesome trivia team called Winter is Coming. Yes, the dirty way. Say hey, Katrin.
Hi.
So the reason I mention the dirty way is because 2 weeks ago, we were not the dirty way. And Katrin didn't realize we had done it the dirty way, even though Alex, our trivia guy, every time says the dirty way. And I just thought that was really funny. And, you know, it's a fun fact, so I thought I would share that.
It was clearly important to know at the time, but now I know, going forward.
Although we did win again that week.
We did.
It had been quite a long time. So this week's book we are going to discuss is called The Man Who Loved Pride and Prejudice by Abigail Reynolds. And as with last time, there will be spoilers, so if you're going to read it, just don't listen to this. But it's going to be awesome, so come back and listen afterward. The very, very first question... What did you think about the book?
I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised. And the reason I had initially wanted to read it is because I was reading your blog and you had written a review of the book. And I am a huge Jane Austen fan, which you know now.
Yes.
And I was really pleasantly surprised. I thought it was going to kind of be not a cheap representation, but you know, I mean, I didn't expect a lot.
You thought it would be a little more trashy.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
It's really difficult, the romance genre for me. Like, you know, some of them are super trashy, some of them aren't. It's like, well, where are they? But I was so, when you're like, oh, I want to read that, I was like, I have a copy, you can have it. And then I had to steal it back from Caroline so we could do this, because I know you passed it on to her.
I did. That's how much I enjoyed it, is that I was recommending it to others.
Definitely. And this is actually the first one in a quartet.
Right.
Only the second one has been released right now. When I get it, I will definitely pass it on. It is called Uncharted Waters. Or no. No, the next one is Morning Light. Uncharted Waters is the third one.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. My only concern with these next couple is that I don't know if they're going to be Pride and Prejudice based or, you know, based on one of the other Jane Austen novels, or if they're just sort of going to be, because it's called the Woods Hole Quartet, so they're set in the same area of Massachusetts out on the Cape.
Right.
So I'm sort of like, I don't know, but, you know, I've read my fair share of romance, trashy romance novels, but I'm excited. And the author, I felt she wrote well.
Definitely.
And she, my big thing was that she used enough of the characters, so she pulled just a little enough of the story to tie it back to Pride and Prejudice.
Right, right.
And that's, it's, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies or Sense of Sensibility and Sea Monsters?
No.
Okay. Well, the problem with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is that the co-author just stuck their stuff into the book. So it's just sort of like Pride and Prejudice stuck in there, and
right.
Then Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, they took the entire story, moved it elsewhere, and changed enough of it, so like it was the same story, but the characters were changed enough, so it was, I don't know, it worked a lot better. So they, you know, they took the inspiration from Jane Austen and kept a lot of her language,
right?
Whereas the first one was just like, I'm gonna stick in ninjas and zombies, and it was really disparate. All right, so have you read any of the original Austen novels before we get into this one?
Well, right now, I'm in the middle of Pride and Prejudice. So Wickham, they just has sort of been exposed, and they're at that ball where he is not present, but Darcy is dancing with Elizabeth, so...
Okay, that's such a good scene. But that actually leads in. I told you I was going to bring this one, and I don't think I have it open, but I know what it is. Twitter users that I follow is Literary Pickup Lines.
Okay.
And I wanted to know your opinion on this one, and it was, you look like a Wickham in the streets and a Darcy in the sheets. And I was like, ooh, I like that one. I favorited it. I don't favorite very often, but I was like, I wonder what Katrin will think about that. What would you do if someone...
So I would be saying this to someone
else?
Yeah,
would you use
or
that?
Would
either
I use
or,
that
I
line?
Mean, you know, equal opportunity.
You know, whatever works. I think if anyone would understand the references, that's an automatic, you know, turn on.
It's automatic first date. Be like, all right, let's go. We're going to go to dinner.
And if they have some sort of comeback for that, I mean, that's even better. So I feel like that's a good way to test the waters, definitely.
Yeah, it was just when I saw that one, I was like, yes, I love this. Whoever this is, I love this. And that's probably not the first Jane Austen one that I've seen before.
Right.
You know, on that note, we were talking about the Jane Austen book club.
Right.
Have you seen the film as well as the
book? I have
book?
Not, no, because it's not on Netflix. It's not accessible in very many ways. So I think I am going to break down and rent it on Amazon. But I wasn't sure if I should read the book first or...
They're different enough, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
But lucky you, I will send you home with my copy of the movie. I've also got the book if you want both. The reason I ask, they make fun of a couple of the pickup lines, like that sort of thing. And it's just like, oh, it's so great. And I know we were at trivia this past week, we were talking about doing Jane Austen Book Club.
Yes.
And the whole idea is, you know, you've got six people and six novels. Mm-hmm. And we could actually, you could do a seventh. There's the Lady Susan, the Watsons, and the unfinished novel, which, you know, they're fun, but they're super, super short. But they're, you know, the six are the main canon. I'm staring at my Jane Austen bookshelf, so everybody knows. Yeah, so that would be a lot of fun, and we should definitely look into it. You know, I read Pride and Prejudice twice last year, and I think I also read Northanger Abbey, which is my favorite.
I've read some of Northanger Abbey. I love Sense and Sensibility. I had to read that for high school, but I love it, and I'm an Eleanor through and through, and
I never had to read any Jane Austen in high school.
Really?
Yeah, I read all six of them the summer I graduated high school.
Okay.
And at that point, I was like, oh, I love Jane Austen. But that's really interesting that you had to read it, and you liked it. Did you like it the first time you read it?
I did. I just ate it up. I loved it. It was so... I'm trying to think. I think it was sophomore or junior year of high school. So, I mean, that's obviously the time you're sort of discovering, you know, boys and trying new things. And so I think that concept of, you know, love and reason and that back and forth and kind of finding that middle ground is, you know, something you can definitely relate to.
Well, and she's so timeless.
Right.
Sense and Sensibility is one of those ones that's sort of right in the middle for me. Mm-hmm. I think Persuasion is my all-time favorite because it's long-lost love and, you know, coming back and the lake house. Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves is
that,
based on that.
I did not. So I've seen the movie, and I recently bought a copy of Persuasion, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, so you'll have to come back, because I want to reread Persuasion this year, and it's the shortest of those six.
Okay.
So it's like a quick read, and then my least favorite is Emma. The only problem is I've not reread it recently, and I can't ever decide if it's because of the Gwyneth Paltrow version, or if it's the book itself. And I do think it is the book, because I love Clueless. Like, that is one of my all-time favorite movies from growing up. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it very closely resembles the story of Emma. Like, and it's based on Emma.
Right.
So sort of along those lines, have you ever read what I call a fan fiction or a spinoff of Jane Austen before this book?
No, I haven't. And that's actually was one of my two hesitations about this book. Or I guess kind of the idea of Jane Austen fan fiction in general is because, you know, the true form as it is just so perfect to me. So I was just reluctant to read any of like the zombies and parodies of it. So I was reluctant because of that, but I was also reluctant because it's my first sort of romance trashy novel as well. So I didn't know if it was going to be able to do the original Pride and Prejudice justice, even just having seen the movie and reading a little bit of the book. So.
Yeah, that is the hardest. You know, I've got a stack of probably 15 that I haven't read and three in my bag, which I'm going to send at least one home with you. And I find the ones that are the modern adaptations are generally better.
Right.
Because they do remove themselves. I've read one, I think it's by Jane Odiwe, Odiwe, and she had the closest language to Austen's original language, where all of the other ones, you know, some of them get close, but they don't have like the nice cadence or the language, or they throw something in very wrong. There's one, I think it's called The Darcys and the Bingleys, and it's like they discover the book, the Kama Sutra, and I was like, oh, this is weird. And you know, it's like, so it's set in the Regency era, but in general, I think I like the modern adaptations because they're so far removed, and like there's the modern technology and the people and that sort of thing. So you've read Sense and Sensibility, and you're most of the way through
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice. Have you read any of the other ones?
No, some of Northanger Abbey, but I never quite finished that one. So
it's, I mean, oh my god, I can't believe I did that. Northanger Abbey is not my favorite. what was I thinking? Mansfield Park is by far my favorite.
Okay.
And I think that's the longest one. And the reason I love it is because of Fanny Price, who's this like super controversial character. Either people love her or they hate her, because it's either she's a product of her upbringing or she's not. I don't know how to describe it. We'll definitely talk about that one when we DJ Nasa Book Club, because we're going to do it.
Right. And I know we're staring at your collection right now. I actually have one of those. It's all of the novels together
the
in
compendium.
One. I do. The one that kind of looks like a quilt on the front.
Okay.
I love it. And that was one of the things I had to bring with me from Arizona. I have a lot of stuff at home, but that was non-negotiable. It had to come with me.
I can't wait until you see the movie, because it's happens in the movie. This is perfect. That makes my life. I have a set, the same set I bought when I graduated high school, and they've gone with me from North Carolina to England, from England to Boston. The compendium makes me so happy. You just wait until you see the movie, and we're going to check back in. So what about other classics? Do you read classics on a
I guess I try to read more classics. I recently read some Hemingway that I really enjoyed.
I've never read Hemingway.
Really?
Never.
No, so I would love to get into more classic. I just sort of get overwhelmed sometimes when picking the next book, because there are so many things I would love to read that there's no possible way to read everything that you could.
It's,
and you have to choose between modern authors. And I mean, I listened to audiobook to Tina Fey and
nice.
Like Mindy Kaling. And so it's like, there's that genre, but then there are so many classics to read. And I really enjoyed Tale of Two Cities as well. So that's one of my favorite classics.
The only Dickens that I liked. I struggle with Dickens because I think he needed an editor. But I agree with you. The number of books on my bookshelf that I need to read, the like 500 book list on my website that I want to read, it's so difficult. If there is not a book that I know I want to read next, thankfully, because I have the website, I'll go to random.org and I'll put in one through whatever number is listed on the website, and then it'll pick the next book for me.
Oh, great.
Which is awesome. But if you're interested in reading classics, you should look at the Classics Club. You know, it's online, and they do, I think they actually do a Goodreads book group too, so that if you don't like blog or anything, and you basically, it's a 5-year goal, and you just say, I'm going to read X number of books. And it's really interesting. So what it does is it encourages you to read the classics. And going back to where you were like, oh, Emma, I loved that when I was at school. All of the books I read in school, I had a visceral dislike for.
Huh.
So like, and part of that is because I read so much growing up that when I had to read a book for school, it took me away from the books I wanted to read.
Mm.
And then, you know, having to dissect them and talk about them, it just sort of ruined it. Whereas it's ironic, now I have a book blog where I dissect them and talk about them, and a podcast where I talk about them with friends. So before we actually start talking about the story, this is a little bit more about Jane Austen. So Mark Twain, did you have to read?
Tom Sawyer, yes.
I've only ever read Huckleberry Finn. Everyone else read Tom Sawyer.
I did both, yeah.
Okay. Mark Twain said this following quote, and I wish I could like record your reaction. I haven't any right to criticize books, and I don't do it except when I hate them. I often want to criticize Jane Austen, but her books madden me so that I can't conceal my frenzy from the reader, and therefore I have to stop every time I begin. Every time I read Pride and Prejudice, I want to dig her up and beat her over the skull with her own shin bone.
What?
So you've never heard that quote?
No, I've never heard that quote.
He had such a dislike of Jane Austen, although it's funny because that makes it sound like he read it multiple times.
Right, true.
That when I went to go find the full quote of this, because the one that's most commonly said is the very last line, there was like an entire web page of probably 10 or 15 quotes where he complained about Jane Austen. And I was like, what is wrong with you, Mark Twain?
Right.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, I don't know if he was just a sexist. I don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to go too much into it, because like, we're definitely going to have to do more and 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 more Jane Austen podcasts. But it was just like, you know, she was so far ahead of her time. Like,
right.
What she was writing about, the fact that she was a single woman and she was able to eventually make enough money to live, and the subjects that she was writing about, you know, they're not as controversial as like what some of the Bronte sisters were writing about.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it really interesting. She was writing these strong female protagonists.
Right.
Like, you know, she was writing about, and what's one of the, okay, no, we're not going to go into that. We're going to go into this book. So what were your thoughts about this book? I really liked this one. Like,
right.
So
no,
just tell me a little bit about it.
I enjoyed it too. And I'd sort of relating it also to the Mark Twain quote and what you were mentioning about the strong female protagonist. I think too, she also writes about love, and love is not perceived as a weakness, too. And so I think that was something with Cassie, who is the Elizabeth Bennett character in this book, that she, I think, sort of was battling between, you know, like her career and this sort of need, want to be loved as well, which I think, again, it's sort of a timeless theme through Pride and the original Pride and Prejudice and this book.
Yeah, so. And I think, you know, and she gave her, Abigail Reynolds gave her this, like, badass job. Like,
yeah.
She's a scientist. You know, she's not just a scientist, she's a researcher. Like, she's an academic researcher, which I found really interesting. There are so few female scientists. There are so few female academics in the sciences. I think, and then it also gives that perfect setting of the Cape. Like, you been down to the Cape since you've
I
been
have.
Up here?
I do. I have a great aunt and uncle who do 4th of July every year the Cape, so near Hyannis.
Okay.
So I've spent a little bit of time down there.
And one of the things that I thought that Reynolds did really well was her description. So, like, writing about the Cape towns and how it does empty out in the summer. And I've actually not ever been to Woods Hole. The most I know about Woods Hole is the National Oceanographic Institute is down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then NPR has a studio down there.
I think it might warrant a road trip this summer.
Yeah, we'll read the next book and then we'll make Caroline go down with us.
Yes.
I don't know. It was really interesting. And I love reading any book about where I grew up, you know, set in either North Carolina or in where I'm currently living. So, like, in Massachusetts area.
Right.
But specifically, I love it when it's like, oh, I recognize that.
Right. Because no matter how good the descriptions are, if you've been there, it just does something to shatter that distance between your story and you and your life. And
yeah. And it brings it in. It's like, even though, you know, this is fiction, you're like, this could be happening right now. Like, Cassie and Calder are totally hooking up. It's like, you know, it makes it that much more real.
Right.
I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what did you think about the Mr. Darcy in this book, Calder? I don't remember what his last name was.
Westing, I think.
Oh, that's right.
It was very, very prestigious, I thought, just even reading his name. I mean, Mr. Darcy is such an iconic character who I feel like all Jane Austen fans measure up, you know, men against. So I felt like Calder was a good representation of, like, modern adaptation of Mr. Darcy. I didn't have too many problems with his character.
We'll keep talking about Calder because I actually almost, like, want to love him more because he's an author.
Than
Darcy, but because he's an author. So
right.
He's, like, Darcy modernized and he's a writer.
Right.
So I'm like, ooh, even better. But I know we didn't have a disagreement, but I know of the two film adaptations, of the two big film adaptations. I know you are a big Colin Firth fan.
I am.
I always Colin Farrell, I always confuse their names, and then it's like, wait, what? But yeah, anyway, so big Colin Firth fan. When did you first watch the BBC adaptation?
I think that was probably when I was in high school as well. I think it was probably around the same time I had read Sense and Sensibility.
I am amazed you've never read one of these spinoffs.
I know.
If you were like, when you saw all of this, because, like, that is, it's such a crucial time period.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you clearly love Austen now that you're in.
I'm hooked.
I mean, yeah, they're great. See, I actually really liked Colin Firth. My only problem is that because that miniseries is, it's like 8 or 10 hours or
it
something.
Is.
It's so true to the novels, mm-hmm. and I read so fast. I could read the book in less time than that. Maybe that's why I didn't like it as much. I mean, I loved the actress that played Elizabeth, and I thought Colin Firth was great. And I actually think the older he gets, the more attractive he gets.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, you know, he's aging very well with, God, what was it? A Single Man and A King's Speech. It's like, wow, you know? But one of the great things about Colin Firth, and I know we already talked about this, is that in multiple movies, he has repeated the scene where he falls into the water, which I think is hilarious. Like,
right.
I mean, that was a career-making thing for him.
Right.
Have you seen, I'm sure you've seen Bridget Jones.
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen both of them?
Just the first one, I think.
Okay.
I don't think I've seen the second.
Well, when we do those for this podcast, we will watch them as well.
Okay.
Have you read the third book that was recently released?
No, I actually haven't read any of those.
Okay. I've only read the first one. I've got the first two, so
okay.
You're welcome to borrow them. So you're not aware of what happens in the third one?
No.
Okay. Well, I won't tell you. It's been getting mixed reviews.
Okay.
I've had some friends that I've read about it, and I don't remember how I saw what happens, but it was just kind of like, wait, what?
And that recently came out?
It did.
Okay.
Either at the very end of last year or the beginning of this year.
Okay. Huh.
And I think it's the final one. I think she's just going to do the trilogy. But it's what happens is kind of like, what? But they're, you know, they're good movies. And,
Right.
Colin Firth sort of reprises his role as Darcy in them. And then Hugh Grant is Wickham. Hugh Grant always,
Yeah.
It's something about his eyes. There's something about his eyes that is questionable.
Or what's behind them, I think. Or
yeah, although I did love him in Notting Hill.
Notting Hill is a wonderful movie.
Julia Roberts. Great movie. Another great movie. In London. But yeah, so those are, at least the first one is, I know, is very well written. But the third one has a big, like, oh no. according to everyone I know who's read it so far.
Right. So you do prefer the Keira Knightley version.
I do.
Of Pride and Prejudice, though.
So, and the reason I love that one is, there's two big reasons. One, I think I love Matthew McFadden.
Oh, yeah.
But I just, there's something, he's so brooding in all of his roles that I've seen him in. So I think, whereas, like, Colin Firth sort of has, like, this happy-go-luckiness, and, like, I don't know if you, have you seen What a Girl Wants with Amanda Bynes?
I am ashamed. I think I'm going to say ashamed to admit I have seen that.
Well, I'm going to make you unashamed because not only have I seen it and own the DVD,
okay,
but I also have the soundtrack.
Great.
It's actually, it's a phenomenal soundtrack. Like, it's got some classic rock and roll on it.
Right.
It's got some great pop songs. So it's like, it's actually, the soundtrack is really good compared to the film itself, which is,
right.
But you know, that's sort of like one of the things that I compare him to. And he does fall into a fountain. Plus it's just, you know, it's a hopeless love story. Yeah, if you've ever read my blog, you know this about me. That's sort of where I think that, whereas, you know, like, I mean, Colin Firth has had a much longer career, so, like,
right,
you know, the actor himself, even though that's early on for him, and something about Colin Firth's face is, like, it's very welcoming, and, like, it's, you know, it's, like, you could go up and talk to him, whereas,
right,
like, Matthew McFadden, like, there's nothing about his face that makes you think, oh, I want to go have a conversation with you.
Right.
There's something in his eyes and the way when he delivers the letter to Elizabeth, you know, and he's just standing there, and, like, his mouth barely moves when he's talking, and you're just, like, your heart breaks, like, and every time, like, I think I went through a big Pride and Prejudice phase last year. I probably watched the movie 5 or 6 times.
Wow.
That version. It's a very finite amount. And then aside from him, the other reason I really like that one is the one scene, and it's actually another tangent. Have you seen the Rent movie?
Yes.
So, you know, when they sing, it's towards the end of the movie when, oh my god, I don't remember either of their names.
Oh, no.
The two main male characters.
Yes. I'm not going to be able to
Mark
help you.
And the rocker.
Right.
We've got to look it up.
You have
to. I don't know what their names are. You know the scene where they sing the final song before Mimi dies?
Yes.
You know when he goes out west?
Yes.
And, like, they, you know, he's, like, standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon,
right,
singing the song. That was one of, I knew when it happened, or when they announced that they were going to make this into a movie, I knew they were going to do that.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, it's just going to be so bad. You have to do it when you have that option.
Right.
Mark and Roger.
Roger,
yes,
that's great.
I knew Mark because Mark's adorable. I knew as soon as they announced it, I knew they were going to do that epic sweeping panoramic of the Grand Canyon with him standing on it or somewhere in nature. And I was like, oh, that's going to ruin the movie for me. And it did.
Mm.
Like, the rest of the movie I thought was well done. But, you know, it's like, when they do that, when they have the opportunity to do that, they do that. But they did that in Pride and Prejudice. And I love that scene. And I hate myself because I love that scene.
You hate that you love it.
I hate myself so much that I love that scene. And it's part of it is because it reminds me of the Moors, that scene.
Mm.
Like, I know they're in the Lake District, but it's like she's standing on the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, they do this huge panoramic. And it's just, it's stunning, the scenery. And it reminds me, you know, the original cover of Wuthering Heights, I'm showing her my iPad cover, is just the scene. It's just one tree on the moors. When they did that scene and, you know, what precedes that scene, it's just like, it's just, it's so stunning. And I honestly hate that I love that scene in that movie. Oh, there's just so many scenes that I love.
It's
and
then so beautiful.
Yeah, and the scene within the giant stone, like the temple, when the first proposal, like, you just, they did it so well.
They and did.
I was worried when they announced that she was going to be it. I was at the point where she had done so much. I was like, ugh, I don't want to see her again.
Right.
And then I just fell in love with it, and it doesn't hurt that when I reread the book the last two times, it's not even those two that I see. So it's not Keira Knightley, it's not Matthew McFadden, it's the actors that play Jane and Bingley.
Aww.
Those are the two, like, they made that movie for me. Like, she is absolutely stunning. She's doing a TV show, I think, or a movie. She's got one coming out, and it's like, I have to see this.
Right.
And then Bingley, you know, he's a ginger, he's adorable, he's redhead. and just their chemistry was so great. And
it,
I thought
was.
The chemistry between Jane and Elizabeth and Bingley and Darcy, I thought, was so much better than in the original one.
Right.
And I love Brenda Blythe. That was not Brenda Blythe. That was not. Who plays?
I'm gonna have to IMDb.
That I do. This is bad.
And I think, I mean, it could have been just the formative time it was for me when I saw the Colin Firth BBC version. But I mean, I also love the Keira Knightley Matthew McFadden. And I think while Colin Firth holds the special place in my heart, Matthew's a close second. I mean, they both just did so well. And I think brooding was the perfect word for his sort of interpretation of Darcy.
And I, you know, I wasn't sure, and I didn't like him immediately. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, oh, I don't know about you. But it also has a phenomenal soundtrack. Like,
oh, right.
That is one
right.
of those soundtracks. I could just turn it on, and it just puts me there, and I just smile, you know, like just the opening notes to the scene and like the panoramic as she's walking into the house. It's great. So it actually was Brenda Blythe. And I love her. If you have never seen Saving Grace.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, you should watch it. I wish I own it. I need to buy it. I don't know if it's on Netflix. I'll have to check. But it is hilarious. Her husband dies, and she decides she's going to, she's a great gardener. Hmm. And so she decides to get into the weed business.
Okay.
And chaos ensues. And I watched this. It must have been in high school. It was the funniest movie. I'm sure it doesn't hold up at this point, but she's so great.
Mm.
And I just remember laughing in hysterics. And I don't even think I understood any of like the weed jokes or the pot jokes that went on, but just watching her in this movie and like what happens. So yeah, so all right, so let's go back to the book because we kind of went off on a really, really long tangent. So what did you... Oh, so back to be the modern day Martha. Modern day Darcy, Calder
yes.
Westing. So I think the reason I like swooned is not only was he brooding and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of incredibly handsome,
right.
but then you find out later in the novel that he writes these books that she loves.
Right.
And I was just like, yes. Yes, please. You know?
Right.
And so when she finds out, you're just kind of like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, that because I'm trying to remember, I think at that point in the book, he was developing feelings for her when she had said that she really enjoyed that author. So the fact that he sort of kept that hidden, I think that was something I also really liked about Calder, is that he wanted Cassie to like him for who he was rather than his family or the money, all you know, all
yes.
the prestige.
And it is. And that's what it was. It was just sort of like that he wanted to prove same thing Darcy did, you know, and that's she took just enough mm-hmm. to bring it in, to put it into the same setting in the, you know, 200 years later.
Right.
And then when he sent her that copy and like, oh yeah, you can borrow my copy. And I was just like, oh, and then you just think back, I'm going to have to reread this book.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just like, oh. But back to the brooding real quick. Did you ever read Wuthering Heights?
Never read it. I saw the BBC version with Tom Hardy.
Okay.
But I never read it, so.
So I don't know if anyone's written about it, and I think I tried to find some information on it. I have this theory, like, the comparison of Heathcliff and Darcy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way they love... It's not standard, you know, it's not any sort of romantic love that you would read about in a modern romance novel. I mean, I guess I'm sure they're out there, but it's, you know, the dark brooding characters and they
right.
love in, it's almost like they didn't know how to love.
Right.
And so it's really interesting to me, and it's funny that these two characters, and I think the last time I read Pride and Prejudice, the first blog post I wrote about it when I read it last year was a fanboy letter. Like, I love Jane Austen. Here's why I love Jane Austen. I didn't really talk about the book.
Right.
Whereas the second one, it was either the second Pride and Prejudice or my response to reading Wuthering Heights again last year
mm-hmm.
was when I was talking about the two. And I think they're really interesting. It's like, it's a fascinating comparison to put those two together and be like, so they really weren't that different.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's a little the product of their upbringing. I definitely think the brooding guy in the background, it could have gone so much darker.
Right.
And maybe that's part of where Jane Austen grew up versus where Emily Bronte grew up. So I don't know. It's really interesting.
I think what you said too about that standard sort of love, or even just, man, I really enjoyed this book, but I kept grappling with, is this a realistic sort of representation? Like, is there a Calder Darcy? I mean, I guess it's a question we all sort of ask ourselves. Is that person out there who would go to such great lengths to get to Cassie, when he writes an entire novel about their story for her, and he tries to get the job at her university for her? I don't know. That was something I was struggling with a little bit, because of course, like you, I share that hopeless romanticism. At the same time, is that sort of unhealthy to sort of expect and indulge? And
you clearly haven't read enough of these yet, because he's out there. We all have one out there. That brings up another thing. What I really found great about this, and you'll see if you read more romance novels or even some of the Jane Austen spinoffs, is the unrealistic time frames. One of the things that I love about the original Jane Austen novels, and this one did it very well, is that the courtship takes years, you know, right. It takes a long time period. Whereas, like, some of the novels I read, they meet, they sleep together within a week, they're confessing undying love for each other within like a month, and then it's happily ever after. And I'm like, get real. Okay, maybe that does happen, but no, it really doesn't. You know, it's like happily ever after for 6 months.
Right.
This novel, it was over the span, I think it was over the span of at least a year and a half.
Right.
Before things, you know, they did meet and they did have sex. They didn't confess their undying love for each other. They did, where we only read this from Cassie's point of view, but they did, you know, she's like, oh, I can't get involved with this. This is not going to end well. And, you know, we sort of wonder, you know, what's he thinking? What are his thoughts? But then it takes almost 2 years, I think, from what I'm remembering.
Right. I think you're right. Because she did go another summer, and then I think it was the second summer that they were there together, maybe? I can't quite remember.
Yeah, but well, it's like the second summer she went, and she's like, oh, I don't have to worry about running into him, because I'm not going to see him. And then he does make a purpose to come back to see her, and she is not nice, because she's gotten back with her former boyfriend.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of like, well, that's awkward. But I actually ended up really liking him. I don't remember what his name is.
Was it Rob?
I think it might have been Rob. We'll call him Rob.
Okay.
The way he was like, you know, I understand that you have to follow that. It was, oh, I didn't expect you to be that guy. Like,
I am remembering that scene specifically at, because they were, I think, were living together.
They were.
They had sort of that conversation that she was in love, because that was right after she found out about Calder and his true identity as an author, the author that she loved. And she sort of confessed that she was in love with him and didn't know if anything would ever come of it. And she goes into her bedroom and's crying. Yeah. And Rob comes in and decides to hold her rather than leaving. And that, I think, was a really poignant scene.
Yeah. And I think it makes me want to read more from Abigail Reynolds. And that's a good sign for an author, I think. Mm-hmm. If they're able to suck you in one novel, and especially in a novel that's based on another novel,
right.
They have to have some sort of talent. So I'm definitely interested in saying more about her. What did you think about the Jane and Bingley characters?
I liked that storyline. I think that they kept it pretty true to the original. And so I liked it.
Yeah. I wanted a little bit more. I thought it was creative how they brought it in.
Right.
And the wedding, the scenes at the wedding and that portion were hilarious. When Calder and Cassie do decide to get married, that is one thing that was great, that she didn't end it at the engagement. She took it a little bit further.
Right.
When, I don't remember their names, but Jane and Bingley, when those two characters, they have their sort of falling out in the chapel at the rehearsal dinner. It's like, oh, great, now what's going to happen?
Right.
And then they meet the preacher, and then that evening, Cassie calls, and she's like, oh, we're kind of busy right now. And it's like, oh, but yay!
Right.
What did you think? So in the original Pride and Prejudice, they are, you know, they're sort of, they're on the downward, not spiral. She has five daughters.
Right.
Mr. Bennet, Donald Sutherland, yes. I love. That's probably one of the biggest reasons I loved that version, is Donald Sutherland is amazing, and his voice, Canadian. We learned this at trivia.
Yes.
No one else believed me. He is Canadian. They're sort of on the downward spiral. How did you like how that was done in this one? Like, it was really interesting, and they sort of kept it off. So, like, we didn't find out until just before the wedding, I think. Like, they sort of,
with her
Cassie
brother.
Alluded to it, yeah, with her brother.
Right, right. So it wasn't quite the same as the original Pride and Prejudice, which, I mean, sort of what you've been saying, it's a modern adaptation, and like you were saying, Abigail took just enough to sort of keep it similar to the original, but had changed a little bit. So I thought that was fine, that she sort of gave Cassie's family a little bit of a different backstory, but still one that was she was ashamed of and didn't really want to come forth with. And I know I have a little brother, and so I could really understand and relate to her connection to her little brother and just wanting, I mean, he is not in trouble, you know, with what Cassie was dealing with her brother in jail and everything, but I can relate to that sibling bond.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, and I thought it was great because the Calder Westing is from a super political family, and she was very concerned when it was like, oh, this is actually going to happen. She's like, well, she was keeping quiet because of the statute of limitations, because she hit him that one time, or he was there. Wouldn't say she actively hit him. It was really interesting. I don't know where Abigail Reynolds is from, but one of the things that I enjoyed was the kind of dig at politics that was put in there, because it does. I'm from North Carolina, which is a pretty conservative state, and you're from Arizona, which has been in the news for ridiculous reasons recently, which we don't have to go into.
Right.
Everyone's. I mean, I read an article yesterday about apparently North Carolina wants a state religion and tried to create their own currency last year. They're doing a good job of shaming themselves. It's not just Arizona making asses of themselves in the public. But I thought that was really interesting that she sort of brought in that dynamic. And there was the instance where it's written to assume that he is conservative, but probably not as conservative as the rest of his family. And it's very, very openly mentioned that Cassie is pretty liberal. She doesn't live in Massachusetts. Where was her school? I don't remember. It's like Pennsylvania?
I think it was Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think it's Pennsylvania. She's funded by the government, the National Research Foundations and that sort of thing. Speaking of, how adorable was that when he made the big donation so that she would get her position the next year?
I am just such a huge fan of grand gestures like that. So reading that, and I think too, again, going back to that point that Calder didn't come forth with these things that he knew would make her happy and make her obviously have feelings, because he didn't want her to feel obligated on any level. But I also really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and it's the Darcy all over again. Mm-hmm. That's why it has stood the test of time. For the 200th anniversary was last year.
Right.
So it's like, that's why it stood the test. 200 years later, those type of gestures, you know, it made you smile. And even though they didn't reveal it until like 10 or 15 pages later, you knew exactly what it was. And my face hurt from reading this on the TV because I was grinning so big. I was like, oh, I have to stop grinning. But it was one of those books where as soon as you finished reading it, you held it to your chest.
Yeah.
It's like, and you took a deep breath and you're just like, okay. Okay, I'm just going to wallow in this for a little bit, and then I'm going to keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else in the book that you wanted to bring up?
I think towards the end I wasn't sure where Abigail Reynolds was headed with Calder's big speech when he was trying to defy his father so that to protect Cassie's brother. It seemed like Cassie was really uncertain and almost scared that Calder was able to sort of deliver this conservative speech so easily and so well that it was like a fundraising dinner type thing. I guess I felt like that point it sort of was drawing on a little bit, but were you happy with the ending of it all?
I was, and the reason I thought it worked great is that it felt like it could have gone longer, and she probably could have ended it a little bit earlier. And I'm sort of wondering if maybe it had to do with the next novel, because the next novel it's Cassie is mentioned in the blurb, but I wasn't sure where it was going. And everything after the engagement was so exciting for me.
Right.
And I think when I was writing the blog post, I talked about something being brought back up that I'd put out of my head because I just got so wrapped up in the romance of it. And what happened with his mom was heart-wrenching, but then, you know, I thought it added that extra dynamic. I think including that last speech, she had to put that in there to both test and prove Cassie's commitment to it. So, like, you know, we're reading this from Cassie's point of view, and she's, this man is both terrifying and brilliant.
Right.
Having that there sort of shows her that she does know who he is, but that there's still more to learn.
Right.
And I think I thought it was brilliantly done. It's been a lot longer since I've read this, since you read it.
Right, right. So, I did enjoy the mother storyline as well.
So. Oh, there's so much we could talk about, but we're going to go on to the last little bit. I'm going to have you read a section It's not a sex scene. At one point, I will probably make someone read one leading up to one, which I think is great. So if you just want to read that for us.
All right. Once the water was deep enough, he could see the bioluminescence. It wasn't the bright glow he'd expected, but rather sparks of light that appeared where the water contacted his body. Normally, he would have watched it with interest, but now his thoughts were fixed on Cassie, who wore a look of enchanting happiness. She twirled around in front of him, her arms outstretched, tiny sparkles of light outlining her limbs as she moved. "It's magical, isn't it?" He smiled slightly. "I thought it was science." She laughed and deliberately splashed water at him. It flickered as it left her fingers and again as it ran down his chest, and he began to understand her delight in it. "It's dinoflagellates. I can't explain it step by step, but it's more fun if you think of it as magic." "Oh, so it's science and magic," he replied loftily, just to see her smile. "Here," she took his wrist in her hand, "move your arm back and forth like this and wiggle your fingers, and you'll get a light snow. It's nice and long hair, too." She dunked her head underwater and swirled it around, creating a glittering net of tiny diamonds in her hair. She reemerged, smiling and looking like a naiad as the glittering water drained off her. He was entranced by the visual spectacle of the lights outlining the curves of her body as she spun around once more. Stopping, she looked up at him and splashed him again. "Didn't anyone ever teach you how to play?" she asked with amused exasperation. "No," he thought, "no one ever did. I like watching you play."
Oh, you've got such a good reading voice. You Thanks. Should do audio narrating.
Oh, maybe in another life.
But it also, doesn't that scene just make you want to go swimming?
It just, it's so ethereal. I have read a few books since this one as well, and I forgot that her descriptions were just so well done. It wasn't too much, but enough that you really did feel like you were present. And there, that particular scene, there was a lot of magic to it.
I think the reason I highlighted that one is because of the descriptions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get the playfulness of Cassie saying, "Did no one teach you how to play?" And Calder being like, "Well, no.
Right.
You know, I grew up in a political family. I, you know, stiff upper lip," and like that sort of thing, which I thought was really, really interesting.
Right.
So, all right. So to close out, we've got some fun questions. You unfortunately actually got a sneak peek. You were one of three people that has heard episode one. What did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed it. So I know this is episode two, but if you haven't listened to episode one, it's definitely worth going back to and listening to.
I've got four questions. Do you own a library card?
I do a Boston public library card, but not a Somerville library card.
Oh, well, the fun part is you can use your Boston one in Somerville.
Which I didn't know.
Minuteman Library Network. What was your first library card? Do you remember?
I do remember going to the library with my mom and my brother, because growing up in Arizona, there it's very hot in the summers, and so unless you're seeing a movie or in a neighbor's pool, there's not a lot to do. So we definitely lived at the library and did a lot of the reading programs.
Summer reading programs, like the stickers and stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Every week we'd go in and like trade in our, I don't know, we had stickers for prizes and stuff based on how many pages, I forget, we were reading.
When did you get your BPL library card? Was it when you first moved here, or did you wait?
So I was an undergraduate at Boston University, and despite having access to the library at BU, I think I did it was for a specific book that I needed it at BPL, but I mean, I was still, of course, overjoyed to get another library card. So.
Oh, yeah. And you actually still work for BU.
I do, yeah.
Do you still use the library at BU?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do. You can find me there on my lunch breaks once in a while. Nice. So
I actually just got my work card activated.
Oh, okay.
So that I can use my library at work. So along those, do you own a digital reading device?
I do not.
Do you not? So you don't have an iPad or anything?
No. I do have an iPad, but I use it for work.
Okay.
So I haven't... I did borrow one of my roommate's Nooks and read Water for Elephants on that. And that was my first experience with a digital reading device. And
what did you think?
I can definitely see the convenience of it, especially on the T. I definitely feel some judging eyes sometimes, depending on the book I'm reading.
I say be proud, but I have noticed, and I think it might help you with some romance novels, is I read a lot more trashy romance novels now that I have a Kindle.
It might be a worthy investment then. I don't know. There's just something about having... I know that's the argument so many people have, is just having the physical book, and even looking on my bookshelf in my room and seeing all those different books. I like being able to kind of pull them. And I know you can still lend through the electronic devices as well, right?
Yeah. So, and what's great is both BPL and Somerville, you can check out ebooks.
Oh, right.
So it's great. But one of the reasons was I was worried I would stop reading physical books. But looking at my bookshelf right now, there are still a ton of books over there. So, I try and alternate.
And especially like I had mentioned with the Jane Austen collection that I have. I did buy a smaller version of Pride and Prejudice because I wanted to be able to take that. I'm not going to take all, you know, six novels on the tea with me every morning to be reading. So.
Well, and, you know, every book written before 1923, you can get a free version. So for your classics, you should buy a Kindle.
There we go.
So sort of going along those lines with the digital reading devices, you said you listen to some audiobooks. How often do you do that? Do you like them? Like,
the only two books I've done that for are Tina Fey's Bossy Pants and Mindy Kaling's Is Everybody Hanging Out Without Me? So, okay. And it was mostly because those two were narrated by the authors. So I really enjoyed the Tina Fey book. Was a friend had it and lent it to me. So I was listening to that actually when I was studying abroad in London because I had a long commute to an internship, and I was, you know, laughing out loud on the, you know, on the tube. So
the podcasts I listen to make me cackle. So
right,
that's nothing. But what do you think? Would you read like would you listen to a romance novel or like a fiction book, or do you think you would just stick based on the narrator?
Right, I think it kind of would be based on the narrator. I'm a big Downton Abbey fan, and I know Dan Stevens actually read one of the James Bond novels.
Yeah.
And so I would consider purchasing that on digital audiobook just to hear that.
He has done a lot of books, actually.
I think I would stick based on narrator.
Now, would you, I know you and Caroline recently saw BJ Novak and got books signed by him.
We did.
Caroline was telling me when we went to book group last week, I think he reads his, doesn't he?
He does, yes. And I know, so it's a book of short stories. And actually, I brought it for you because I want to return the favor. You're sending me home with an armful of books, so I will leave that for you. But it's a bunch of short stories. And I know he narrates a few. Carey Mulligan narrates a few. Mindy Kaling narrates one of them, which is, I listened to that clip online.
You might not want to leave it with me, because it will take me forever to get to it. But I am excited. I do want to read them because the few that I've seen and the one or two that I heard were actually really good.
Right.
Aside from Pride and Prejudice, which I know you're reading right now,
yes.
What was the last book that you read?
I actually just read Time Traveler's Wife, which I had never read or
Audrey
seen.
Audrey Neffenig?
I'm terrible that I don't remember.
Something like that. I read it back in 2006, so
okay.
Not long after it was originally released. It was originally released in 2003, so maybe I read it earlier than that. Maybe I read it in 2005. What did you think?
I liked it. I think there are definitely some components of the book you have to get over, like that a grown naked man is showing up in a field with a little girl and who will eventually become his wife, but I think it definitely presented some interesting themes of, you know, free will and choice almost and destiny, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I didn't like the movie as much. Okay. It did not do the book justice.
I will stay away from it. But it is interesting that almost 11 years later, it's still going strong.
Right.
And I remember when I read it, so I must have read it 2 or 3 years after it came out, but I remember I gave my copy to someone else. Like, and that was a point where I didn't do that. Like, I kept all my books. I hoarded them, and I remember that was one of the few that I actually passed on to another person. And it was I remember crying at that book. It was probably one of the first books. Well, the first book I remember crying at was in high school, but I'm not going to share that title. When I remember reading it and just being like, oh.
I cried as well. I think I had, it was a little bit less than 100 pages left, but I had got home from class one night and was reading from 10, and I think until like 12 or 1, just because I had to finish.
Yes.
I just had to know, and I was crying.
The books that you have to finish are always the best books. So not the last one. Do you have a favorite book or genre if you don't have like a specific?
Sense and Sensibility is really high up there with me.
Yay,
read that.
Jane Austen.
Going back to Jane, I really love that book, and I think that's definitely one of her most timeless books.
How many times have you read that one?
I read it, I want to say 4 times.
Oh, wow.
In terms of a genre, I don't know. I just, again, will kind of read anything someone recommends or puts in front of me, so okay. I have a hard time nailing that down specifically. But I did, Madeline L'Engle was one of my favorite authors growing up, and I think I do kind of want to reread A Wrinkle in Time and some of those books, because those were some of my favorites.
I remember reading, you know, like The Chronicles of Narnia, those with my grandparents, but I don't remember when I got these. It may have been as late as college. The last question is, if you could make me read one book, what would that be? Now, I know it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, you clearly have seen my blog, and I know Caroline was like, you should read some erotic fiction. And I was like, Caroline, you clearly don't read my blog. But, you know, like, is there a book out there that you just think would be amazing that you think might fit with me? Be creative. It's your answer.
Oh. It's so hard. I would definitely recommend the BJ Novak book, which is okay. why I had brought it for you. Just the collection of short stories, and some of them are longer and shorter. It's sort of a little chaotic to read at times, but yeah. going to the book reading by BJ Novak, he was saying how themes emerge that he didn't even intend. Yeah. So I think that's one that you will definitely enjoy.
Yeah, and that's a good one too, because I always want to read more short stories, but I know that short stories are the hardest to write and they're the most difficult, and, you know, getting everything into that finite amount. So I have the utmost respect for people who write short stories. So that's a good suggestion. Great suggestion. All right. Well, I think we will wrap things up. You can check me out on Twitter at Jeff_Whaley. Definitely check out my blog. It's jeffwhaley.com, The Oddness of Moving Things. Katrin is also on Twitter. It's Katrin Mary. She also has an awesome Instagram account. Do you blog or anything like that?
I do not, no.
You don't blog. Oh, I'm going to have to get people to start blogging so I can share their blogs. Is there anything else you would like to say?
Just that it was a pleasure, and I definitely hope to come back and discuss more Jane Austen.
Yes, Jane Austen Book Club. You heard it here first. We're definitely going to do this at some point. All right. Well, thank you very much.